He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing Buck Rise and hanging out. Windy City intern here as well. You're listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Lots to get to today on what obviously was a huge day and night last night all around sports, and a lot of it impacts our area. Obviously, we're going to get to the Louisville scandal. I know a lot of people in this area care a lot about that, and we'll cover that in a few minutes. But before we get there, you just heard it in the update, the Preds are losing a coach. So the Preds are losing defensive coach Phil Housley, who also handled the power play. And Phil Housley headed out to Buffalo to become the head coach there. First and foremost, before we get to anything else, what has to be said here is a massive congratulations to Phil Housley, a person we had the chance during the season, during Coffee with the Coach, to hang out with many times, and a person that much of the league highly regards, felt like this was about to happen. A lot of hockey minds have thought for months that he was going to be in the running for a head coaching position. So it's nice to see a Stanley Cup run not only pay off for the team, not only pay off for the city, but also in some way. You always feel like a Stanley Cup run helps the coaches involved. I think, you know, that gave a little extra push for Coach Housley, and deservedly so. He heads to Buffalo, where we will root for him unless he's playing the Predators.
Am I allowed to say something to the effect of, no, I'm not happy that this run happened for him?
Well, that's fine.
Am I allowed to say that? Like, is that poor taste?
No, that's
to say, congratulations, Coach. We wish you the best. I think you deserve it. Way to go. And I am really, you know, not happy with the fact that they were so good that you got to leave.
Yeah,
because I think you were an extremely valuable member of the coaching staff and did an awesome job with the defense corps, arguably the best defense corps in the NHL. And that I don't like that you've left, and I'm not going to be excited about this move. Is that poor taste?
Yeah, no, that's not poor taste. When has poor taste not been the right taste for us anyway? That's part of our charm.
It's our only taste.
Another T-shirt, poor taste. It's our only taste. In the process,
it's our
of
only
this,
flavor.
I think that, you know, again, I think people saw this coming. I have to believe, especially even given the conversation happening about it over the last couple of weeks, because you started to really hear the rumor mill churning over the last couple of weeks, specifically about Housley going somewhere else. So you have to look at it and say, I believe that the Preds probably saw this coming. Much like we continue to say, look, David Poile is not surprised that there's an expansion draft in a few days. It's not like he woke up and closed the Stanley Cup book and said, oh, well, this is nifty. Expansion draft.
Right, like he probably had his list at the beginning of the year.
Right.
And then maybe tweaked it. Kind of like draft boards for NBA coaches right now, right? They've got their boards. They probably have their board, and they, throughout the course of the season, maybe a guy goes up one or two spots, but for the most part, they know their evaluations. I'm assuming David Poile has all of those things already figured out.
Well, and head coach Laviolette, I always think back to like my time on the road as a band leader. One of your biggest functions as a band leader is to have a working list, because you never know when somebody's going to come in and say, you know what, and it happened to the man Perry a few times, where a guitar player, we were right in the thick of a massive year where we were on the road for 300 days. Guitar player came in as we were at the airport one day and just walked up and said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm out. So you lose a guitar player. It's not like you have 3 months to make a list and suddenly decide who your guitar player is going to be. You have to have a list. And that's sort of part of the function of certain job responsibilities. When I think of Laviolette and a head coach is going to have – he's got a little list somewhere in his mind or in his pocket or on a computer of names and thoughts of coaches, just like teams and GMs have lists of possibilities, so do coaches. So I'm sure he's got a short list right now, people. And if you're a defensive-minded coach, man – this is a and this job is open. You want it.
Now, I think what's interesting about this is Phil Housley, generally your defensive coach, is also in charge of your power play. What I think would be very interesting is how much, just hear me out on this, how much coaching do the top four defensemen on this team really truly need? Or maybe do you want to hire a guy who's maybe got a power play specialist tag? Like maybe you hire maybe you hire a defensive coach that's like, because like, there's all kinds of coaches, right? There's look at the NFL. There's guys that are great talent developers. There's great scouts. There's great play callers. There's great one-on-one guys. There's, you know, there's all different types of guys with different strengths and weaknesses, right? Well, if you could hire a guy who's really great at taking young defensemen and turning them into really good developed veterans, right? You could hire a guy who's really, really good on the power play. That just has a brilliant mind for executing and organizing and designing a power play. Obviously, you want a guy who does both, but there are different guys that have different strengths and weaknesses. If you had to pick one of those two, I would almost err on the side of, all right, let's get a guy who just sort of keeps them where they are as a coach. They don't need to be overly developed right now. They're already the best. But what they could use, not the defense corps, but the team could use, is a further advanced and developed power play, whether that's schematically or, you know, design, you know, whatever it may be. The increasing the power play, which was Coach Housley's job, I would be okay with finding someone who maybe errs on that side of the spectrum. Obviously, you need a good defensive coach. I get that. But you don't need someone who develops talent. You need someone who sort of has a good system, puts it in place, and is really good on the power play. That would be my angle. And I would assume, to your point, and I always say this about athletic directors in college athletics, you know, if they don't have a list under glass and like a break if needed kind of thing in their desk, and it says, if my coach all of a sudden falls off a motorcycle and can't coach anymore with a volleyball player, who can I call that's going to say yes? Like tonight, that I can call. And that's sort of your job as an athletic director, and David Pohl's job as a GM, and Lavi to some extent. You have to have a list in place at every second of the day, even if there's no rumors about your coach leaving or there's no thoughts that your coach could leave. You never know when a guy retires or does something stupid or whatever, health issues. You never know why a guy may have to leave, and you got to be ready to fill that spot very quickly.
I think also to your point of what do they need as a coach, if there's anything we've learned about this organization over its history, over its 20 years, is that that David Pohl and this organization does a good job of finding great defensive talent. So you don't need a coach that can coach them up in that world. And also, to your college analogy, we talked yesterday about no matter who Butch Jones hires, it's still Butch Jones' offense. Well, no matter who they bring in as a defensive coach, there are very specific things that head coach Peter Laviolette asks of his defensemen that many teams do not, and it's part of the way they play offense, part of the way they play defense. It's part of what makes their system special. It is such a specialized system that I agree with that also, that it seems like between the fact that Lavi has a specific way he's going to use them and Pohl has shown that he can find them throughout the draft. I'm not sure you need a coach him up great defensive specialist there, but you do need help on the power play. I mean, right. I think that does beg to the fact that they need somebody that can really come in and maximize that part of the team. It'll be interesting to see, because each coach, the difference between football and hockey is, remember that there's only three coaches on a hockey team. So, you know, that makes this different. The difference to me is a little bit locker room oriented too, because when we would go to practices, Housley was definitely well-liked by this team, definitely had a good rapport with the guys, definitely sort of had that connection with everybody. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of personality fits into that system as well, because they're going to need somebody that is the right personality for this locker room, which has a great mix of veteran leaders and young guys that are sort of coming up. That takes a special sort of personality in the process. And I always felt like Housley was one of the guys that specialized in making practice fun. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get that sort of personality brought into the same situation.
Yeah, and they've got a couple of big-time defense prospects coming up in the wings. It's not like that the system is light in that department either. So it'll be interesting to see Gerard and Fabro, what those two guys do and how they're developed. So, they're, you know, maybe there's something to that. Like, hey, we need to develop the next set of guys. But that is sort of the minor league coach's job.
Right.
Who, by the way,
is going to be with us at 8 o'clock a.m., Dean Evison from the Milwaukee Admirals.
There you go. So,
come on.
So I think there's and maybe there's input from him on this situation. You know, who knows? So it'll be very interesting. I could not – I was asked a couple of times on Twitter, like, who do you think is going to take over? I'm like, I have no idea.
I have no idea.
I'm not even going to try to pretend that I have a list of names. I don't have that list of names because Peter Laviolette and David Pohl do, so I just trust them.
Here's what I will say. I'm actively trying to reach out to some people that are smart enough to know who that list of names is, and if we can get some viable answers, we'll let you know what people smarter than us think. But in the process of it, it's hard to speculate just because the assistant coach ranks of hockey just aren't as well known as, let's say, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators that are coming up. So it's an interesting situation to be in for the Preds, but it's not an unexpected situation. So if you saw the news yesterday and you feel like, oh, my God, the sky is falling, it isn't. This was an expected thing. The question is just how
to like it.
Right, but we don't have to. But
poor taste, be damned.
Well, and you know, we'll tell you what, we'll like it at least until we can get Coach Housley to come on and talk to us, and then we can, after that, we go. But congrats to Housley and to his family. Again, somebody that's always been really kind to our show. We're happy to see him going back
to where he was such a mainstay in the organization in Buffalo. It's a big deal. And I talked to one of my buddies yesterday. He works at Athlon with me, and has like Sabres jerseys in his cubicle. It's ridiculous. And he's like, yeah, we're excited about getting him. Every time I talk to him, it's super smart guy. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Got to root for him.
It's gonna be a great time for him. Congrats to the whole Housley family, who we know are just sitting up here listening as they pack their belongings, I'm sure. So when we come back, the big news in all of sports yesterday, and it's big news for obviously a lot of us in this area, the NCAA came down, and they came down with the ruling that some think is too harsh and some think is too soft on Louisville and their sex scandal. We'll get into that ruling and what we think of it. We'll do that next up on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. The NCAA yesterday made a ruling, and that's how I'm going to start prefacing it, because some people would say they made a harsh ruling. Some people would say they made a soft ruling. I don't think that you could get a room full of people to agree on this. But
is this like soft Brexit and hard Brexit?
Yeah,
is that what this is?
But the NCAA made their ruling on Louisville on, you know, the sex scandal that, and this is a couple years old, obviously, but Louisville was busted.
Which is actually a very, very, very short investigation time for the NCAA.
Actually
done in a relatively expedient manner in like 30 months.
So
way to go, NCAA.
Congratulations. Well done.
Way to go.
So the NCAA came in and made a ruling on the scandal, and essentially what it comes down to is there was a not Rick Pitino, but there was a person within the team that was providing
Andre McGee
prostitutes for the young incoming recruits. So part of their sales pitch, essentially, the easiest way to break this down without getting too graphic, is essentially that they have a dorm for the athletes, and when the recruits would come into the dorm, they would provide, Andre McGee was providing prostitutes, some of which were underage, for underage people. So it's a terrible, terrible look for the university. Rick Pitino has said from the outset that he had no idea. They got busted because a mom was about to release a book a couple of years ago, and it was a tell-all book, and once Louisville found out about it, everybody flipped. Now, Louisville,
and I don't know what the appropriate term is, the madame of the group there, she was the one that was sort of providing the young women to Louisville, and of course one of them was her daughter,
right?
Which is where it gets very salacious, obviously.
So, and again, some of the girls that were being provided were underage, and some of the guys that
including the daughter,
exactly, and some of the guys that were being recruited were underage. So this is about as bad a look as you can have, especially on this show. And if you've ever listened to this show for any amount of time, you know that Braden's obviously very active in our kids. We have a pretty hard stance on doing the right thing, especially when it comes to treatment towards women. So this is a difficult, mend is something that we both work a lot with. This is a very difficult thing, I think, for me, admittedly, to remain unbiased on. I'll admit that, because I think this is about as atrocious as it gets in the process. So to me, when I look at it, and Louisville did some self-punishment. Louisville essentially came in and said, we're gonna, as the NCAA recommends, we're gonna get rid of a couple of scholarships. We're gonna take ourselves out of the tournament. We're gonna sort of self-punish. We're gonna slap ourselves on the wrist. And then the NCAA came in yesterday and said that's not enough. In addition, they suspended Rick Pitino for 5 games, not at the beginning of the season, but at the beginning of their conference play season. They put the team on suspension, or on probation, I should say, for 4 years. They're limiting the scholarships over the course of the next 4 years by an additional 4 total scholarships, so 1 per year. They're limiting recruiting, and then they're also, at least right now, there is the possibility that the 2013 national championship banner will have to come down, and the win will be vacated. So, and Louisville is appealing this, so we can't make any definitive statements of what's happening yet because it's facing appeal. That appeal is expected to be heard before college basketball season actually starts. So that's sort of catches you up on a very broad view of what has happened here. And Louisville and Rick Pitino specifically are enraged by the fact that this level of punishment is coming down. And the funniest part to me is that the punishment that's coming down is not actually for the sex acts. The punishment that is coming down because it is known that three active players were in the dorms with the recruits partying, and that is a violation. So it makes those three players ineligible. They played with ineligible players. It's a really interesting workaround to punishing something when the NCAA admits in their 35-page ruling, which I read, they admit several
times.
Good on
you, by the way.
They admitted several times they've never seen anything like this, and this is a difficult thing for them to figure out how to punish, essentially.
Yeah, and I'm okay if they work around to punish the university, the basketball program, the coach, if that's who's deserving to be punished in roundabout ways. I'm okay if they need to use Rule X to get to Result Y, if that makes sense.
Sure.
That part I don't have a problem with. Basically, in the report, they did not put anything at Rick Pitino's feet, essentially. They did not say that you did this wrong and should have done this better, which I think is really the big issue here. To me, moving forward, when you talk to other – when you look at other basketball coaches or football coaches, for that matter, this applies to all coaches in college athletics when it comes to recruiting. I think it's, hey, what did you do wrong? What could you have done better? Where's the learning moment in this? And they sort of just didn't say any of that to Rick. Rick Pitino is not being held accountable for any one thing other than you should have sort of known this was going on. Now, which raises the debate, do you think he knew this was going on? Now, I think there are varying degrees of knowing in this conversation. Depends on what your definition of is, right? I think it is an absolute joke if a coach comes out and says, yeah, my players at 10 o'clock, my recruits go hang out with my players in the dorm rooms and they all sit around and they play, you know, go fish and video games. I think that's a joke. I think coaches know and they know exactly what happens when recruits come on campus, which is you try to give them as good a time as possible. Why do you want to come to Louisville? Here's all the amazing lifestyles you're going to have. To suggest that doesn't happen on every single college campus in every major revenue-generating sport is ridiculous. So for Rick Pitino to claim that he didn't think his kids were having parties with especially young women of age is something that happens on every campus with every coach in every walk of sports. So that part just rings completely hollow to me. I'm never going to be convinced any coach doesn't know that that's what happened. That's how the industry works. We don't have to like it. It may be gross to you or to somebody else, but it is what happens when a bunch of kids go on a recruiting visit to Tennessee on football visits and they all go hang out with the other players in the dorm rooms. What is it you think college kids do on weekends? Like, seriously, like, what do you think the regular students do? Not the athletes,
but the regular students.
They go out drinking and they go out and they try to talk to girls. Like, that's what happens.
But there's a substantial difference between a team going out and drinking and then a team coming in and saying, by the way,
right,
you can have any of these. Which would you like?
Well, and to some extent, there are very many schools that have collections of hostesses, right?
Right.
And those hostesses sometimes are asked to do things. And that is a known thing that happens on campuses. Now, when you cross a line between actual prostitution and underage in particular is disgusting, there is lines there that you're crossing. And do we know that Rick Pitino knew about those lines? That, I think, is a more difficult conversation. I think that's to say that Rick Pitino knew that a woman was selling her 16-year-old daughter into prostitution for recruits, I think it's probably likely that he didn't know the specific of that. But to not know the vague overarching, this is what happens on visits, that's a joke. He absolutely knows
about
that.
Who cares about the vagueness? So. The problem is there's no way he could have known that one of his assistants, Andre McGee, was soliciting prostitutes
to
16-year-old recruits.
Why would he know that? Well, I mean,
every coach knows that
what's up?
When recruits come on campus, they go out with the players and they party. Duh. But right. Did he know specifics of Andre McGee, what was going on at Minardi Hall?
You're asking two different questions. One is, does he know, which I've just said, I don't think he would know that. The other question is, could he find out? Yeah, 2 seconds.
Ask around.
You go ask somebody. You got 15 different staffers everywhere, dude. You have responsibility to go ask those questions. That's why I think most coaches know what happens on their campus.
How is it any different than if an assistant coach is handing a player money. It's the head coach that's held accountable for that. How does he have any way of knowing that an assistant coach is handing a player money? He doesn't. But if that happens and if they're busted on it, he's held accountable for it. And that's just part of the
and
system.
And if I was held accountable for all that stuff, I'd be asking every question possible. Now, it doesn't mean that I always would make the right decision. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't look the other way a couple of times. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't make a decision to try to win more games and make my $5 million paycheck. I mean, that's what's at stake here is millions and millions of dollars.
All I'm saying is when the Jay Billises and Gary Parishes of the world who are smarter than us when it comes to college basketball are saying that they believe Rick Pitino and all of his peers are saying that, then there's no – when it comes to what happened with Andre McGee and Minardi Hall, I'm akin to believe them.
Again, Jay Billis is an incredibly intelligent man. For him to suggest that every single member of that coaching staff had no idea, I think he's being a shill for coaches.
He's
and
saying
for,
that
for basketball.
Rick Pitino didn't have an idea.
No, he listed every single coaching staff on. I heard the cut. He listed the SID. He listed every player on. Oh, they're great guys. They'd never know. I just Billis is shilling for college basketball and for coaches, and I'm tired of people shilling for these coaches who are now considered gods in every community. And to suggest that Rick Pitino didn't know that there was some partying going on and that there were some girls involved in partying with recruits is just stupid. Did he know the specifics of what was happening? I'm willing to admit that he didn't know that. And we're all just guessing here. All of us are just guessing. Billis is guessing. Julian's guessing. Fitzy, you're guessing. I'm guessing. We're all just guessing here.
The biggest thing for me is I don't care if he knew. I still think you dropped the hammer down. I don't care if he knew or not. If it happens under his watch, he's held accountable. Jeff Greer from Louisville Courier Journal going to join us up next. We'll get the insight from somebody that's
maybe
right there in Louisville.
Maybe he's not guessing.
Yeah. Jeff Greer will join us up next. We'll do that. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. You're listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is a serious debate.
Yeah, it's just we're trying to get our heads wrapped around everything with this situation, and obviously we wanted to get somebody that's right in the thick of it that will know better sort of the reaction and the thought process from Louisville, and so we're bringing on Jeff Greer from the Louisville Courier Journal. Jeff, man, we really appreciate your time early this morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about sort of the thought process on the Louisville side now that they've had a little bit of time to process the NCAA's reaction.
I think they were pretty taken aback by the ruling. Based on everything that they had said leading up to this, they seemed like they were not anticipating this, which kind of surprises me based on the actual allegations. But I thought there was a genuine anger in their voices yesterday at their press conference, and I would expect whatever response they put through the appeals process to be even more forceful than their previous responses have been.
Jeff, let me ask you just to follow up on that. You said it wasn't what they were expecting. What do you think they were expecting from the NCAA?
Well, it's always interesting when you follow lawyers, lawyers and administrators who are, you always notice they leave, their language is ambiguous or deliberately vague in certain ways to leave open the possibility of different things. So, their consultant, Chuck Smert, who kind of led the process and was in charge of trying to usher them through this whole NCAA inquiry and all that, kept saying, things like, we didn't feel it would be appropriate for them to vacate records, or, things like that, where you're kind of leaving it open to say, if they decide that, we're going to disagree with it. I do think that they probably thought Rick Pitino would get the suspension that he got, and there would be some financial fines or financial penalties of some sort, and I do think that they probably anticipated scholarship reductions and recruiting limitations, but I don't think that they thought they would be required to take their national championship banner down and their Final Four banner down and all of that stuff. I don't think they anticipated that.
So I guess the question is, and you're up there in the middle of it, and we're all down here just sort of guessing, and everybody else nationally is just sort of guessing, because the question is, how much does Rick Pitino know the details of this entire situation, and how much should he know the details of this entire situation as it's ongoing?
You know, the NCAA was pretty clear in its, I mean, it's like a lengthy document. All of these documents, you really have to sift through a lot to get much information. But they were pretty adamant that they don't think Patino knew about this going on for the reason that, and I do believe this, I know he has this checkered history and, you know, obviously nationally, people know him for that sordid story about extortion and an affair and all that stuff. But I do think that he would have, like the players said in the interviews with the NCAA, that he would have flipped out if he had known that this stuff was going on. I think there was a deliberate attempt farther down the chain to hide it from him. But, you know, what they didn't do a very good job of it. I mean, it was right there for everyone to see, but somehow it managed to stay off of social media, off message boards, away from Patino, and it just kind of lingered there for a few years before it broke loose. So, you know, the way the NCAA has made things happen now is their policy now is, whatever happens under your supervision, you're accountable for. So, you know, if your three-year-old spills chocolate milk in the back of the van while you're driving, you gave the three-year-old the chocolate milk and you're driving the van where the spill happened, so you're responsible for everything involved with that. And that's where Rick Pitino is right now.
Jeff, you mentioned the document, and I read through as much of that stuff as I could process last night, but it felt like the NCAA was really saying part of their problem was that Patino didn't actively work to find out more. It seemed like they felt like he was too distant from the program. Did you get that sense as well?
Yeah, absolutely. That was their biggest bone to pick with Patino was, and that was actually the major dispute that Patino's lawyer had back, too, is, the NCAA was saying you didn't do enough, you didn't ask enough questions, you didn't persist enough, you didn't, you know, check on what we thought would be red flags. And you and Patino's lawyer's response was, you aren't telling us what the specific red flags would have been that we would have seen, that Rick would have seen. And so that's been the back and forth, and that's where, you know, you go into court, so to speak, or in this case, the NCAA hearing, and you're arguing your side versus their side, and the panel picked the enforcement side to say, yeah, you should have definitely noticed that things were askew and done something about it.
Any chance the appeal process works here and the NCAA backs off? And if this book isn't written by this one person, does any of this get out?
Two good questions. First, the appeal. I think that what we learned from the panel, from the Committee on Infractions, was it didn't matter how much money was involved. This was a shocking story for these people to read, and I think that's really hard for people when they're in a market, when they're in the area and you hear about it from the local media every day. You hear about it, you know, on talk radio and in the newspaper and on all the blogs, and everybody's talking about these accusations for 2 years. So you almost become desensitized to escorts and teenagers, and it's shocking. So when you are an administrator or a lawyer or, you know, whatever it is, and you fly into this hearing and you hear that, it's stunning information. And it's like, yes, this is a huge violation. We need to hit this place hard. And that's a hard sell to overturn something like that with a different panel. So we don't know what experiences have made the world views of the people on the appeals committee, if they're any, they feel any differently than the infractions panel. But, you know, that's remains to be seen. Now, the book obviously was used as a guiding instrument, but I do think that at some point it would have gotten out. I mean, Pat Forty from Yahoo Sports lives here in Louisville. I'm constantly catching stuff too. You know, there's a bunch of people around here that are following this stuff, and it sounds like it was starting to trickle out around when the book was coming out, and maybe that brought it about, but I do think it would have come out eventually.
Jeff, is there any real significance if the title is vacated? Does that really mean something?
Well, I mean, you know, the memory is not gone. I mean, you know, people here remember that won in 2013. I mean, I lived in Amherst, Massachusetts in the 90s, and I remember vividly when UMass made their stunning run to the Final Four with John Calipari. So, and that got vacated. So, I mean, I think it's more the symbolism of it, the asterisk next to their name, the national embarrassment of getting those games vacated that, you know, is pretty painful for them. But, you know, I think no matter whether there's a banner hanging up in their arena or not, I don't think changes how they feel. But, you know, they can't brag about it, and it's kind of left to the fans' memory. which is definitely, I would say, in this community where they are absolutely obsessed with college basketball, it is a pretty painful thing for them to have to endure, and has created a lot of anger toward Andre McGee and the basketball program for doing something so stupid.
You can follow him on Twitter at @JeffGreer_CJ to get all the updates. You can read him on the Louisville Courier Journal. Jeff Greer, man, we appreciate your time this morning, bud.
All right, anytime, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Have a great day. Jeff.
The old vacating of titles and wins and trophies.
Let's get into that on the other side. And also, I want you to hear from Rick Pitino. He had some things to say. We'll do all that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5, The Game. That's right, Charlie. You're listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet.
I love that man, by the way.
Charlie Monkeck.
Oh, my God.
The number of times I've sat in a room for like an hour and just...
Oh, my God.
I'm like, I don't even know which story we're on right now. They've all woven together. Charlie Monk. Mayor of Music Row.
Roll damn tide, Charlie.
Yeah, that's
in case you're listening.
That's real quick, we're about to get to vacating titles. Real quick, though, I do want to give a shout-out to the Food Bank Throwdown thing that I did last night.
Trey was there,
yeah,
huh?
One of the coolest events I've ever been to. They had, the chef from Farmhouse, from Cinema, from Silo, from Cane Prime.
These are good places to eat, by the way.
It was all these top Chef and I, which is opening a new location in the Gulch, I found out, which is awesome. So all of these different great, great chefs that came together, and they were forced to use only items that are typically donated to the Martha O'Brien Food Bank. And then the protein had to be either chicken thighs that are typically donated or Spam. And
chicken thigh over Spam.
Most people went with the Spam, but it was like one person did like Spam Wellington, and then another person did like they called it a chicken cordon broke, and it was like so.
That's
cordon. But the winner was 210 Jack last night.
I love that place.
Winner was 210 Jack. They did a ramen that used every ingredient they were allowed.
Oh my God, that place is spectacular.
And Grilled Cheesery won the People's Choice Award with a.
Feel like I missed out on
with
this.
A pot pie grilled cheese thing that was amazing, and the Farmhouse won the award for being able to feed the most people, which was a category on the least amount of money. The dish he made, which was chili Achilles, I've never had those before, but chili Achilles, the dish he made would have fed 200 people for $110.
That's unbelievable. So, Trey is the chef at Farmhouse, and,
yeah.
And did he talk to you about Notre Dame, by the way?
No,
because that's all he talks about. I think he's one of the best chefs in the city, and James Beard finalist, and hasn't won anything, but James Beard finalist and has been to New York for that award. And it's part of what's happening in the city right now is these types of chefs, these types of people are coming through the city for the first time in the last 10 years. We've sort of developed that, and we have some of the best food now in the Southeast. We're learning from places like New Orleans and Charleston and, you know, some of these other places with great food, and it's starting. We're starting to get a pretty good rep for some good food in this town, man. Farmhouse is great.
And if they'll have me back next year, I'd love to MC it again because it was such a cool event. All of the leftover food that wasn't eaten is being served today in the Martha O'Brien area around some
awesome.
Of the roughest neighborhoods in
love
town.
That.
So really cool opportunity to see some of the best chefs do some magic. And you could like just walk up and talk to them while they were cooking.
Yeah.
It was the coolest thing ever. So thanks for having me out to that shameless plug there. That was awesome. And I've got it on my Twitter if you want to see how to get involved, all that good stuff. Vacating championships. The question becomes, does it? Because, see, here's the thing. Like, you and I were just talking during the break. if the Raiders win the Super Bowl this year and we find out 3 years later that the whole team cheated and the NFL says, we're going to take
steroids.
It away. The whole team was on steroids. We're taking away your Super Bowl. I don't care. I was a part of all of it. If the Preds, after this long run.
If the Preds had been inflating the puck.
Right.
And they had inflated the puck so much so that it was cheating and they were going to take away their run. Is anyone in this city just going to be like, yeah, I don't remember what we did on Broadway after games? Well, certainly people might not remember, but for different reasons.
For different reasons.
No one's going to ever forget or care. Like,
I mean, to me, lowering a banner is working on the wrong side of the coin. Like, if you want to punish a team, you punish a team moving forward. I mean, if you're going to go as far as to vacate a national championship, then to me, you make all of that. And I get the argument so many people have. You don't want to affect the
you
kids
get
that
into,
are there.
Yeah, you get
but
into
I,
that
I
argument, though.
But I will say the same thing that I said about Penn State and the same thing I've said about Baylor. I don't care about that. I think that when a team is suspended to this level, when the NCAA comes down with the hammer, the right thing to do if they wanted to would be to allow the kids out of their scholarships to go find new scholarships elsewhere to play.
Which they did at Penn State. Right. And, of course, that was deemed completely illegal. Right. So what I think is interesting here, I agree with you that moving forward is how you punish a school, but you have to do it. I think there's particular ways that do it that punish the right people, which is the university, right? Not necessarily the student athletes that are already on campus, the kids who actually go there. So in my opinion, everything comes down to recruiting. This whole story is about recruiting. How do you get good players to your campus? That's how you win games in every sport. Recruiting is the name of the game. Everything Jim Harbaugh does in this entire world is about building Michigan's brand in recruiting. That's everything he does. Every coach, everything boils down to recruiting. Taking a banner down while you don't have a trophy in a trophy case that you can show off to somebody as a recruit, that might have a tiny impact on recruiting. It certainly, in my opinion, wouldn't affect the fan. Like you said, if the Packers win a Super Bowl next year and then 2 years later they take it away, that doesn't affect me at all because I will have known that they won it and I experienced the joy that when it happened. But the way you hurt a school in recruiting is you take away scholarships. And don't give me this crap that there's a finite number of scholarships, that's taking away educational opportunities. It's not, because not every scholarship is filled, so there are opportunities for kids to go elsewhere and get great education. So you're not actually doing that. Financially, taking money away from the athletic department is a huge one. And anything that affects recruiting, so official visits, not allowing as many kids to come to campus, or I think scholarship limitation is by far the number one way to penalize a school. In football and basketball, because it hurts your ability to add depth and build quality rosters. I think it's the most impactful way to impact schools, and it doesn't really hurt the current kid. Now the current athletes. You could put Louisville on postseason ban. Okay, that hurts the current student athletes, but I get that. I get why you do that. You say, hey, you cross the line, you're not allowed to go to the NCAA tournament. Well, they already did that one time. And it hurt that roster and that team that might have actually had a couple of those kids on it. So that one's kind of a gray area. But really, you take away scholarships, I think it's the most impactful way to take away a school. Reggie Bush gave back his Heisman Trophy. Doesn't change that he stood at the podium and accepted the Heisman Trophy. Like, we all know that he stepped to that trophy. Like, we all know that he won it. So.
For him as an individual, he doesn't have the trophy anymore in his – I can't imagine if I had ever won a Grammy, if somebody came in and said, you were on steroids while you played that string section, so you don't get to keep your Grammy.
Would steroids make you a better fiddle player?
No, not at all. Actually, the stronger – the bigger your arms for a lot of guys, the worse you are, because it slows down your dexterity with your fingers. A random fact of the day.
So but, you would have been more on greenies then.
Right. So, but no matter how – if I had one Grammy and I was like, I had to give it back, that as an individual would hurt me. But for a total fan base, and here's the thing.
As a USC fan, as a fan of Jason Fitz,
right.
I'm a huge fan of Jason Fitz. You give back your Grammy. I still love your music.
Yeah.
I still listen to your music and
exactly.
went to your shows and
exactly.
enjoyed your shows and everything.
But I will always say, and I'm gonna stay really consistent with what I said about Penn State and what I said about Baylor, and this is the same instance. Until we find a way that does damage everybody to the core, until we find a way to hold people so accountable that they know that the punishment for their actions is so severe that it affects lives, until we get to that spot, I don't think that you can ever expect true accountability and true behavior. And that's the thing for me. Like, if you know that you are not only like, oh, it's not just a matter of Patino's going to lose his mind. No, it's not just a matter of that. It's also a matter of, in the process of doing this, I could end up shutting down all of Louisville basketball. That's a different. That's a different.
You think
spectrum.
The punishment fits the crime there on that?
Underage prostitutes. I would eliminate their ability to go to the
play basketball
to go to the tournament for a certain number of years. Okay. I wouldn't shut down basketball forever. I would have no problem saying for the next 5 years.
Because
you
your stance on
NCAA.
Baylor is well known. You're shut it down. You're also death penalty guy on Baylor, and I understand
and death
that.
Penalty on Penn State. They never should have been able to play.
And I understand
there.
That. And I get why people feel that way. I really do. Baylor is Penn State's an interesting case because they sort of rebounded so quickly that I think it bothers people. But that's because the NCAA screwed that up. With Baylor, I don't think people like the penalties Baylor is going to pay when we look back in 3 or 4 years for this situation. I would hope, and I really deep in my heart want to see people prosecuted for some of the things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But that's individuals. That's, you know, maybe a chancellor or an athletic director or even a head coach potentially or an assistant coach or, you know, people go to prison, some of that stuff. But Baylor football is going to lose millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, when they are 3-9 every year for the next 3 years because they can't compete. And school morale drops and students don't go to school. They can't get as many people enrolled in class and they don't get the same student body. I mean, Baylor's going to pay a ridiculously heavy price for what took place. But Matt Rhule is now the head coach and he's a good guy trying to do the right things, trying to fix that program. You sort of want him to do well, but you don't want Baylor to do well. So you're sort of caught in between because you want a coach to go in there and fix it, right? You want somebody to go in there and do all the right things and lead people the right way and bring in good kids and make a better environment there. That's the whole point. And so it's very difficult to find out where that middle ground is. Baylor's going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars.
I want everybody involved in that process, just like this Patino process. I want everybody involved in that process to be held to whatever that suspension is. So, for example, if they say we're going to shut down Louisville basketball from going to the tournament for 4 years, I want every single coach that's on that team, every single person working in the basketball program to have a 4-year suspension to them for the same thing.
Even if none of them, even if some of them had nothing to do with it.
Yep. You kill them all at that point. There's the point for me where then you have accountability. Because if I know that you're doing something against the rules that could shut down my career, I'm going to hold you to a higher standard. It all comes back to the phrase lack of institutional control. How do we gain institutional control? Holding everybody to a higher standard. I know that's not a popular opinion on college sports fans, but
I get your point on it. It's just difficult to enforce.
Yeah, well, no doubt. But if you enforce it with a heavy, heavy hand, it becomes harder to justify. Cheating. We're going to continue to get into all of it, but we also have a fight that we didn't have the chance to get into yesterday. Really excited about this one. Chuck Mendenhall Sr. No, we're not, but some famous people are.
Oh.
Chuck Mendenhall Sr. from MMAfighting.com going to join us up next. We're going to break down the biggest fight in all of the land coming. We're going to break down McGregor Mayweather with him. Before we get there, obviously, you know I made the switch to Xfinity. Pay attention to the facts here. The fact of the matter is Xfinity delivers the best in-home Wi-Fi experience. That's because they have the fastest download speeds, the most Wi-Fi coverage throughout your house. AT&T does not keep up. They have more speed to more homes than AT&T does. Plus, they have fast in-home Wi-Fi speeds in every room in your house, so you can watch your favorite shows wherever you want. Sonny can be watching on one thing, and I can be uploading sessions on another, and nothing slows down. The Wi-Fi is untouchable. Got an offer that ends for you, 6/21/2017. Requires enrollment, Nico bill, paperless billing, and auto pay. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. New customers only. Equipment, taxes, and fees, including broadcast TV fees and RSM fees, extra subject to change. After promo, regular rates apply. Free installation limited to standard installation on one outlet. Non-standard installation, equipment, taxes, fees, extra Wi-Fi claim based on Xfinity gigabyte service. Router coverage and speed on a 5 gigahertz band. Severe weather can cause a satellite signal to pixelate or freeze. Here's what you need to do. Hurry and make the switch to Xfinity for as low as $19.99 per month for 12 months, or ask how to get even more speed with Blast Internet now. With speeds up to 75 megabits. I can talk. And now for a limited time only, get free installation. Xfinity Internet's perfect for everyone. Be sure to call 1-800-XFINITY or visit Xfinity.com and make the switch to Xfinity today. And make sure to ask about Xfinity Mobile, a new kind of network designed to save you money. Get up to 5 lines of talk and text included with Xfinity Internet service with no activation fee, no line access fees, plus 2 easy data options available so you can stream entertainment on the go and save along the way. Compare that to AT&T. It can't be touched. Check out Xfinity.com and do it now. When we come back, we will have Chuck Mendenhall Sr. from MMAfighting.com with us Chuck Mendenhall Sr., writer, MMAfighting.com. Next up, Braden Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.